When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey guys, before we get into the episode, I want to thank today's sponsor, Pomp Beauty, who is making education more accessible to the esthetician. You guys are always asking for ways to further your training and knowledge in advanced areas of aesthetics like acne, rosacea, melasma, and more. As you may know, I recommend only the best-in-class brands like Jan Marini Skin Research on Pomp because of the brand education that makes treating these challenging skin conditions a whole lot easier. Jan Marini Skin Research is an award-winning, research-driven skincare line featured in the Journal of Drugs in Dermatology that provides highly effective products to treat a range of complex skin conditions that you're bound to see in the treatment room. Pomp frequently hosts Jan Marini herself on Instagram Lives, and I love tuning in to hear one of my favorite mentors' thoughts on trending topics in the industry. You can manage your clients and retail like a pro, all while furthering your education on Pomp. To purchase Jan Marini product or to retail the brand as an Estee, you can visit the show notes for my personal Pomp Beauty referral link. Now let's get back to the show. Hello guys, welcome back to the Treatment Room Podcast. I'm your host, Tessa Zolli, and it is that time of year. It's tax season. I think for a lot of us beauty professionals, this is when we can get a little bit nervous and have that lump in our throat about taxes approaching. So our goal with this episode today is to allow you guys to feel more confident and prepared when it comes to tax season and your finances as a business owner. So I'm so excited to introduce a returning guest, Danielle Hayden, the co-founder and CEO of Kickstart Accounting.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
You're so excited.
I know this isn't a fun time of year, but I got you. I'm going to make this fun and approachable.
Yes, I really want to credit Danielle because I feel like you have such a refreshing approach to finances and accounting. And this is a topic that can just be really intimidating, especially for beauty pros if we don't have an accounting background. And for a lot of us new business owners, we just don't have the education or expertise with numbers.
They don't train you on that.
And I know you have a little bit of background as a beauty professional, right? Which makes this kind of the perfect crossover.
Yeah, I started my career I went to school for cosmetology and spent some time behind the chair doing hair. And that's where I initially found my love for numbers. So yeah, I definitely understand both sides of the brain and how we can kind of help us put the two together.
Totally. What would you say, Danielle, is your unique business philosophy and what is kind of your why in helping small business owners with accounting?
You know, my why is that I realized very early on when I actually was working at the hair salon that not everyone understood how to use their numbers to their advantage, meaning how do we learn from our numbers so that we can do more of what's working and do less of what's not working? And so I found during this time, I was actually educating the other people in the studio of how to understand their sales and where they were coming from and how we could learn from them to do more to actually hit our goals. So our approach really is that we want to take the confusion out of numbers. We want to help people understand their numbers. And so our entire goal over the last 9 years, which is crazy, at Kickstart Accounting Inc., has been to help business owners understand their numbers so they can make better business decisions. We can't stay in entrepreneurship if we're not creating healthy, sustainable, profitable businesses. And by knowing our numbers, that's how we can create success.
I think it is very common, because we don't understand the numbers, to almost have a little bit of a ignorance is bliss mentality, or just ignore or not look at our numbers, our statements, our QuickBooks, because it can be really scary. And I think we can be afraid we're going to see something we don't want to see.
Well, one, I'll say ignorance isn't bliss, right? Like, don't you feel a lot of anxiety come January? Yeah. It is not blissful. So, you know, I always use myself as an example. So I think that we have a report card effect. So when I was growing up, at the end of every quarter, I knew report cards were going to come out. My parents were going to ground me. I talk too much. I daydream. I don't pay attention, blah, blah, blah. Same thing on repeat. And I didn't get the best grades in grade school. And so it taught me that I was going to, air quote, fail, right? Like, I'm grounded. This is a bad thing. And then we become business owners. Now we get this quarterly financial report from our accountants, and we suddenly feel like we're back in grade school. Did you fail? Did you pass? Well, guess what, guys? It doesn't work that way. Like, you all passed, and we all, just as business owners, have to put our big girl pants on, big boy pants on, and look at the numbers and learn from them so that we can just make better business decisions and continue to grow.
What do you feel is the first step a business owner should make in terms of having a healthier relationship with their finances?
Having a healthier relationship with your finances, I would say separate your business and personal. The more that we can have everything 100% separate. Now, from an IRS perspective, the IRS wants them separate as well. So if you're not separating them, you can do what's called piercing the corporate veil. It just means that if somebody sued your business, they can now come after both you personally and your business, because you commingled your business and personal. So we really want to keep our business and personal expenses separate. By doing that, we're able to embrace the money mindset of, this is for my business. If I want my business to be profitable this year, I need to understand where I'm spending money and why. If I'm trying to buy a home, then I need to be putting away money in savings, but I need to understand my savings or my spending personally, right? We had a client who came to us a few years ago, and she said to me, Danielle, I need you to teach me how to run my business at a loss. And I'm like, okay, odd request, but I'll take it. And we did what we call a catch up. So I brought in all the transactions into QuickBooks, and we did a financial review call with her. Just means that we went over her numbers and took a look at everything. And I said, Jenna, I got good news and bad news. The good news is I don't have to teach you how to run your business at a loss. You're profitable. The bad news is that we don't have time to prepare for tax season, because it's like December. Now, the cool thing that happened here is that because Jenna was looking at her numbers, she was able to change her entire mindset. You know what happened was that she was commingling her business and personal. So she thought that her business wasn't making money, because she was putting all these personal expenses through her business, when really those are all draws. So she had no cash, but she thought that the business was losing money. When she started to understand that, it changed everything. That next year, we watched her go into growth mode. She started investing money in advertising, marketing, and conferences. And then she grew a team, and her entire mindset changed.
What do you think is the reason people have this commingling of expenses? Is it a lack of understanding of what is a business expense? Is it failure to create separate accounts?
I think there's a logic that I've heard from some clients over the year, that this is my money, right? Especially if you're a solopreneur, if you haven't hired a team yet, it's easy to say, well, this is my money anyway. I don't feel like transferring it from one account to another account. Like, I'm just going to spend it from here because it's easier. Well, I would argue it's actually not your money. It's actually not your money. It's your LLC's money, and it's your business's money. and that account is only for your business finances. If you're going to go pay for a personal meal, or you're going to go pay for your rent, or anything like something with your kids, that is personal and it needs to come out of your personal account. So I think that's the biggest reason. Look, and sometimes it happens. Like, I have a tendency to lose my credit card every other month. It's like a running joke in my house. And so I'll occasionally commingle because I lost my business card. I need to put on my personal card, vice versa. So I'm not saying it can't ever happen, but we don't want it to be the norm.
I want to talk about, getting prepared for tax season. And firstly, just wanted to ask, how common do you think it is for small businesses to kind of get screwed over or overpay on taxes?
Oh, it actually breaks my
heart. Really?
So yes. So here's what I have found is that we are scared to spend money, meaning we think that we're better off doing our bookkeeping on our own. And we put together some form of QuickBooks and we're doing it on our own because we don't want to spend the money. However, when we get to the end of the year, one, we haven't made good business decisions, right? Like, how are you making good business decisions without having financial statements that are done on time throughout the year and are accurate? You haven't saved the proper amount. You don't know that anything is accurate. So you're not making those decisions intentionally. Like, you want to go buy a software, but you thought you couldn't afford it. But here you just had an expense classified the wrong direction. It's so easy. Where you should have bought the software, you would have had ease of use. You would have saved yourself time and money, but instead you didn't spend the money because your bookkeeping wasn't done correctly. Or you're like my client, Jenna, who thought that she was losing money, but it was just because she was commingling. She was using QuickBooks Self-Employed at the time. QuickBooks Self-Employed AI tools doesn't tell you when you're doing your bookkeeping wrong. I know. It doesn't tell you. So that's part of the problem there. So when we go to file our taxes, one, we didn't make business decisions throughout the year. And if we have things misclassified, we're overpaying in duplicated sales because we synced our point of sale system and it didn't sync correctly. Or we had something categorized as a sale that really should have been an owner's contribution. Like, there are big, there are things in accounting that can create big swings in how much you're paying in taxes. And if we're not watching to make sure that they're done correctly, we can really overpay. And it breaks my heart because they're the clients who come to us make the most confident, like, I was doing my own bookkeeping. I really don't think it's that bad. I think I'm doing a pretty good job. And then we're like, should we tell them how bad this is?
Oh, gosh. Yeah. It's like some tough love, but, we got to hear it. What about somebody who maybe is doing those right things you're saying, like they have hired a bookkeeper, they have a CPA, they're doing QuickBooks. What are some strategies for, somebody like that who's a responsible business owner? What are some ways that type of business owner could optimize their taxes?
So I would make sure that you're putting everything through the business that you possibly can. Now, there is a fine line here because I think that there is some tax influencers online that sometimes I'll watch these reels and I'm like, I don't think you should be doing that. That feels pretty, pretty gray. So I'm not saying overtake or put things that are truly a personal expense through your business, right? We only want to put things in our business that are for business. But like, I had somebody the other day say to me, well, I didn't put my Audible subscription in there because sometimes I buy a personal book. And I'm like, well, is it majority of the time that you're listening to business books? And I'm like, yeah. I'm like, well, then put the Audible subscription in your business. The Spotify music that you're playing, that is a business expense. Like, go down through your income statement step by step to make sure that you're including all of the things that are business expense through your business. I do have a guide, kickstartaccountinc.com/gift. And in there, there's a guide where you can go through the entire income statement and just give you some ideas. Are you putting everything through the business? Now, there are a few misconceptions that I've seen over the years, such as meals, vehicle expenses, and home office. So those are kind of the areas where you really want to educate yourself before deciding, is the business paying for it or personal, and how you're going to take that deduction. I'm not saying don't take it. I'm just saying make sure that you understand it before deciding who's going to pay for it, you, your business, or you personally.
Okay. That is encouraging, you know, to hear that there are deductions out there we can be safely choosing, and that we should, and that is a good decision for our business. Because I think a lot of us get so nervous, we're like, I'll just err on the side of being super conservative.
Yeah, we find either people err on super conservative or not conservative. I had a client when I record. So I recorded an episode on our podcast, Business with Books, on meals. And when I was done, when it came out, I had a few clients in the top of my head. I'm like, I am sending this to them because they think just because they're on their way to work or home from work, they literally will put every meal that they have on their business card. And I'm like, this really... Like one, the IRS only allows you to take 50%. And if you are an S corp who's not paying yourself a reasonable salary, it can really mess with your tax basis. And so it's something that we really want to do cautiously, and we don't want to be overtaking in our meal. So yeah, these things are available, but keep in mind in this industry, you're typically, unless you are doing your treatments in somebody's home, your car probably isn't owned in the business's name. So therefore we want to be tracking mileage rather than your entire vehicle expense. So I say put all of your vehicle expenses through your personal account, and then make sure you're tracking your miles throughout the year if you're running errands for the business or making a stop for a client or dropping off a gift or something like that. It's not commuting to and from work, but if you're running errands for the business, then you can be tracking your miles and then taking that at the end of the year.
That is something I just started doing because I ship out all these orders for my business and I have to drive to the post office, which is 15 minutes away. Ah. All of last year, I didn't track any of that. And it kind of dawned on me recently, like, gas is getting expensive. I should probably be logging this.
It's not too late. Go back through your calendar. So I tell people all the time, you don't have to, like, the IRS wants to see that you're tracking it, but it doesn't really matter that you didn't track it all year. So you can go back through your calendar or your order log where you know that you are shipping things and take the mileage. Or you can even look at every time you had a expense, like a cash expense to the post office, that you track the mileage to the post office for every single one of them. So go backwards. So for anyone, if you missed out on this, use your calendar to go backwards and just track it in a Google Doc, Word document, save it to your corporate documents, provide it to your CPA. Going forward, there's some really cool apps out there. I love MileIQ because it will alert you every time you put your car back in park, like, was this business or personal? And you can select, was it business or personal?
Okay, that's so good to know. I was actually just looking through apps and I will definitely take that recommendation. There anything else you can think of as far as just little things we might be forgetting as far as important deductions?
The other one would be a home office. If you are doing work from home, so you might have some admin time where you're doing some corporate work for your business at home. If that space is dedicated for business use only, even if it's a small corner of your living room, as long as the only thing that you're doing in that space is for your business, make sure that you're taking the home office deduction. You'll want to prepare the square footage of that space so that you can add up all of your mortgage, utilities, alarm system, the bug guy, right? Like everything that you put together for that you pay for your house, you're going to add all that up and then multiply that by the business use percent. So I think the big thing that I see people, what they say is, I'm too small, or it's just not that much. It's not that big of a deal, but it is a big deal, right? Because if you just let go of the Audible subscription, like I mentioned about my client, she had missed out on Audible, Spotify, the home office deduction, and the miles. Well, geez, you might have been too small for one, but not all four. And then you just left a lot of money on the table.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And sometimes you don't really realize that until you get your tax bill and see how big it is and realize, you know, I should have been more proactive with these things. And I think it is kind of standing up for yourself as a business, and you have to advocate for yourself in that way, or it is just so easy to hand over a lot of money after taxes.
I just want to highlight the word that you just said. It's important that we advocate for ourselves. So I think that we allow, or we put a lot of the liberty on our CPAs, and we allow them to guide us rather than making sure that we're educated. So if you're listening to this episode right now, like, congratulations, you are educating yourself so that you can be prepared. Now, when you go to file your taxes this year, you can say, hey, I know that I'm allowed to take these expenses on my return. Did you include that in my return? Oh, no, you didn't, CPA? Well, shame on you. You know, like, let me give you my home office. However, if you work with a very transactional CPA, they're not going to ask you these questions. So your CPAs, it's not their job to say, did you work from home at all, right? Like, it's your job to give that to them so they can include it in the return. Now, when we work with our clients at Kickstarter Accounting Inc., we do what we call a kickoff call with every single one of our clients. And that's that time where we can say, did you work from home at all? Is there any expenses that you commingled, right? How are you paying for your cell phone? Those types of things, so that we're checking those boxes. But if your CPA is not having that conversation with you, you really have to be your own advocate. You have to take responsibility as a business owner to be tracking these things so that you are taking what you deserve. Nobody is coming to save you.
Danielle, do you think there is generally, that is kind of what you get with traditional CPAs? They're not necessarily asking those types of questions.
So it's the whole reason we originally we only did bookkeeping. So I think the last time you and I recorded, we were only doing bookkeeping. We have since, as a CPA, I said, let's add tax services, because I could not, it made me sick to watch our clients come to us and say, you know, I tried to ask my tax accountant all these questions. They didn't respond to me. They don't get back to me. They aren't helping me. And we just couldn't sit on the sidelines and let it go. And so this will be our third year doing taxes alongside of the bookkeeping, because we want to break the mold. We want to challenge the industry. Now remember, tax accountants, they went to school for taxes. Like, literally, I sat for my CPA. I'll tell you what, we learn as much about running a business as you guys learned about running a business. They don't teach you that. And so they're taught how to file the tax return. That's it. Period. Not tax strategy, not how to run a business. And so we look to our CPAs, and if they are only providing that transactional service, I just want to say that there's more out there. Now, some people, that's all they want. They're like, look, I don't want to talk to this person. Like, money's confusing enough. I don't want to talk to them. So they would rather drop off all their documents, all their receipts, and then just sign the return afterwards. But the IRS, let me tell you, it does not matter. You sign the return. You have to review it. So if your CPA is not reviewing that with you, you signed off on it.
What about when it comes to audit protection? I know that's something it seems like CPAs offer. Do you think it's something we should consider? I know it's like an extra maybe $300 or something like that.
I don't have a strong stance on that. I think that if you're following those guidelines and you're keeping the documentation, I think you need the audit protection. Okay. I mean, review your return, know and understand what they're deducting for you. You know, if you're offering audit protection, what does that say about what you're letting your clients
do? Interesting. Yeah. You know,
I had a client who had came to us. She was so upset, and her last CPA had encouraged her to write off her boat because she's like, I only took one client out one time, and she was writing off a portion of her boat and the RV. And although I can appreciate creative ways of saving money in our taxes, mm-hmm. I think that there's a way of doing it fair. And if you're following the rules and the guidelines of the IRS, you're okay. You know, it's just when we overtake.
Okay. That's reassuring. Aside from deductions, I know one important strategy for small businesses is making sure you're choosing the right entity. Can you talk a little bit about LLCs, S-Corp, and how to make the right choice there?
Yeah. So when you file your business, hopefully all of you have filed as an LLC. If you are still doing as a business as a sole proprietor, use this message right now as your invitation to file the LLC paperwork. It's not that difficult to do it on the state website, or you can hire somebody like LegalZoom to do it very inexpensively for you. So you want to have that LLC protection. That's a legal thing, not a tax thing. So go file the LLC. From there, this is really just a pass-through entity. So you are claiming all of your income and expenses on your personal return. You still need to have bookkeeping because you still want to have all those income and expenses categorized correctly. When you pay yourself as an LLC, you are taking owner's draws. I like to think of it as going up to the cash ATM of your business. You're going to put in the ATM card and you're literally taking out cash. That's it. You are not a business expense to your business. So you are not going to show up on the income statement. You are not an expense. So that's, again, back to my client, Jenna. She was taking out all these draws as ATM withdrawals. She had needed cash and she was putting those personal expenses. It's okay. However, all of that's considered a draw. It's not a business expense. So as an LLC, you're going to pay taxes on the net profit of your business. So it's sales minus business expenses. That's what you're going to pay taxes on, not your owner's draws. So that's a big one, is you do not pay taxes on your owner's draws. So I'll go into S-Corp, but do you have any questions on that? Does that make sense?
I think a lot of people do get confused. Like, when am I ready to be an LLC? Can you kind of elaborate on that? Would you say it's any new business owner?
Day one. Yeah, day one. The minute that you are renting a space or you start taking clients on your own, day one. Like I said, it's a legal protection. I want you to have legal protection from day one.
Okay. And it's not more expensive to be an LLC. It's more financially savvy.
Correct. Okay. Yes. It's legal protection. It doesn't actually change anything from a tax perspective. Sole proprietor and LLC, it's the same from a tax perspective. We're just talking legal. Once we become an S-Corp, now we're changing our tax status. So we recommend, it's a three-step process for our clients to become an S-Corp. I want you to be making $50,000 a year in net income for at least 2 years. So do not become an S-Corp unless you have $50,000 a year of net income. Sales minus operating expenses is your net. And you want to have 2 years, not one, because we really want to make sure that you have consistency within your business. Kind of qualification number two is that you are not commingling business and personal. Once you become an S-Corp, it's really important that you're not commingling. So don't become an S-Corp saying, yeah, once I become an S-Corp, now I'm finally going to stop. Like, no, you're not. It's like going on a diet when I finally, like, do it first. So you want to separate your business and personal first, and then you become an S-Corp. And then the third qualification is, I want you regularly taking owner's draws. If you are not regularly taking owner's draws, then I don't want you to become an S-Corp. Your business has to be used to taking that cash withdrawal from your business, because once you become an S-Corp, you have to pay yourself a reasonable salary. So the IRS says, once you become an S-Corp, you have to pay yourself a reasonable salary. That means anybody who if you were to hire somebody else to do your job in the business, that what would you pay that person to do your job? That is how much you have to pay yourself as an S Corp. You can take all the draws that you want after that, but you have to pay yourself the reasonable compensation first. So it's serious. It's a serious to become an S Corp. However, there's a lot of tax advantages. You'll ultimately pay less in taxes because you're paying less of self-employment tax. You're on payroll, so you're a business expense to your business. You lower the amount of net income in your business. So there's a ton of tax advantages of becoming an S Corp, but just don't do it until you know that you're ready.
What is the process like for becoming an S Corp similar to an LLC? You'd hire somebody on LegalZoom?
Yeah. So it's actually, you can do it all by yourself. It is a very, very simple form. You'll fill out the form. You'll fax it to the IRS.
Now we know.
Very simple. Yeah, very simple.
Great. You touched on paying yourself, and I think that is an important topic for small businesses. Can you talk about how to go about paying yourself, and how do you decide how much to pay yourself?
So as an LLC, you'll just take those draws. As an S Corp, you'll pay yourself through payroll. So once you complete that form and you send it to the IRS, you have to make sure you're setting yourself up on payroll. So it's a must. In terms of the amount, if you are paying yourself as an S Corp, you'll go run that salary.com or work with your CPA. Like when we do taxes for our clients, we provide as part of our tax strategy, the reasonable compensation worksheet for our clients. If you are an LLC, I recommend doing this rule of averages. Take your average sales for the last 12 months. You can just run your P&L by month, profit and loss by month, or income statement by month. Just take the average of monthly sales minus your average cost of goods sold minus your average operating expenses, and that equals your average profit. That profit is then what you can take in draws. However, if you have debt in your business, make sure that you're leaving enough income, enough profit to pay down the debt, and then you can take draws.
I'm reading the book Profit First. Have you read that book?
Yes.
What do you think about that philosophy of making your profit the first and foremost thing in your business?
Yeah. So I love Mike Michalowicz. I've heard him speak several times. He's great. So I love the concept of profit first. What I have found is that the percentages kind of set business owners up for failure, the percentages that you have to transfer. And what I have found through the years is that clients will get so defeated, like, why can't I hit these numbers? Like, why every other business owner can do it? Why can't I do it? I'm not able to transfer this cash. And it becomes this like self-fulfilling prophecy. So I want you to have those checking accounts, and I do want you to use them, but I don't want you to be so married to those percentages. So I do recommend that we have an operating account. So an account that money's coming in, your expenses are being paid from. Second account is your tax savings account. So you should be putting aside 25% of your net income, not gross. Mike Michalowicz wants you to not have to have bookkeeping, and I think that's wrong. We want you to have bookkeeping. You're going to save your net. Otherwise, you're going to way oversave in taxes, and that's not necessary. So in our second account, we're going to have net, or we're going to save our taxes based on the net income. The third account is our rainy day fund. So in the rainy day fund, you'll have 1 to 3 months worth of operating expenses. So if something happens, you know that you have that fallback to be able to cover all your operating expenses. And then the last one is that profit investment. So saving for a big investment, you know, maybe what you want to redo your website, or you want to add ads to your business or something, you can start to save for that. But I like to do it intentional, right? Like be really intentional about it. So I understand the draw to profit first, and I love the concept of it, but just make sure that it works for you.
I think that's also such a good point about having those separate savings accounts for things like taxes or investments. I actually haven't heard of that. So for me, it's always just like, here's the surprise at the end of the year. Like, do you have the funds? But this makes so much more sense.
No. Yes. So when we send our clients their financial statements, so when we send our clients our financials, it's usually monthly or quarterly. And we give all of our clients a snapshot. So it's a monthly PDF document that walks them really easily through their whole financial picture. And in there, we give them their tax reserve. And their tax reserve is the amount that they need to be saving so that they're prepared for tax time. So if you are working with a bookkeeper, ask them to send you your tax estimate. It's not the amount that you are going to pay to the IRS, because that's based on the numbers that your CPA gives you. This is what, if you are doing really well in 2024, like let's say 2024 is a record year for you and you are finally doing awesome, I'm so excited for you, but I want you to be saving it, that additional funds for the taxes.
Okay. I also want to ask you, how do you talk to businesses about their financial wellness? Is that something you kind of coach people on? And how can we as business owners kind of understand if we are in a good place or not?
So I think it's just learning to ask for help. So when we work with our clients, we do offer, so when we send them the financials, usually we send a Loom video, just walking through a quick video of their numbers. Using our healthy percentages of how much people are spending in specific categories. Is it healthy or unhealthy? But our clients who get the biggest ROI on our services are the clients who ask for help. They're the ones who are booking the calls. They're the ones that are saying, I have no idea what you're talking about. They're the ones that are like, can you help me? And those are the clients who get the best return.
That is, I think, also encouraging to hear that we can and should be asking more questions, because I think sometimes you can feel like, I don't want to take more of their time or overstep.
Find somebody who you like talking to. You know what I mean? If you like talking to them, we have a judgment-free zone at Kickstart. So our clients know that they can come on a call with us and say, I have no idea what you're talking about, Danielle. Like, I just don't know what you're talking about. And we'll walk them through it. And I don't care how many times I have to do it. I will do it over and over and over again, because they're the ones booking the call and asking for help. And I do it without judgment. My team does it without judgment. So just find somebody who will give you that grace to be able to say, it doesn't matter how big or small you are. Like, we work with clients who, like, we have packages that tier with their size. So our packages start for somebody who's doing less than $50,000 a year in gross income. And then our packages go up from there. So there's no such thing as too small. Like, we want to help you. Like, that's the whole point of our service, is to bring access to business owners who typically didn't have access to this. So if you're working with a CPA or a bookkeeper who wants to work with big business and you're not their ideal client, you might feel that way. Just know that there's other solutions out there for you.
That's great to know. I think one of my last questions for you, Danielle, is can you talk to us a little bit about healthy spending? I saw you did an Instagram post on this on the Kickstart accounting page, which I really liked, because I do think we can be conditioned to think you must save as much as possible, you know, you need to be budgeting at all times. But for us beauty professionals, that maybe we see the value of investing in certain equipment or certain lines. I think estheticians especially, we're constantly needing to reinvest in our business, and we have a lot of those types of expenses. Can you talk to us about kind of when should we justify these purchases, maybe, versus when are they not so beneficial for a business?
So the big thing that I want everybody to walk away from with healthy spending is that we have to spend in our business. When clients come on calls with me and they say, where should I cut back? I'm like, what do you mean cut back? You need to spend money. So I would ask yourself, are you hitting your goals? And if the answer is no, then we actually need to look at our spending to make sure that we're spending enough. So this is all mindset, right? Like, the mindset I just heard is, I need to cut back. Am I spending too much? Well, maybe the question is, are you spending enough? So it's going through your income statement. So you'll want to go through your income statement and compare it to the healthy spending. So what you're referring to, everybody can go and download this. It's kickstartaccountinc.com/healthy, and you can download the PDF, and it walks you through the income statement where you can compare your advertising and marketing to how much you're like, what you spent compared to whether or not it was healthy. If you're not growing and you didn't spend enough in advertising and marketing and you're in the low end, well, then it's very clear that you need to spend more in marketing. If you are spending way too much in back bar supplies, then like maybe you're spending 45% of your sales in back bar supplies. Well, then we clearly know that we need to cut that back so that we can spend in other areas so that we're hitting our goals. And it's just about finding the right equilibrium for you. It's a guide, not a rule. So you might be in a season where you have to really stock up your back bar. And then once you're stocked up, like next year or next quarter, it might, your spending might even out. So there was going to be a little bit of seasonality to that, but just know, what are your goals and are you spending it? Does your spending align with your goals?
Do you think it's more common for businesses to spend too much on expenses or not spend enough?
I have seen people with our clients, I've seen more people underspend than over. But what we find is that people land in one of four money personality types. You're either a keeper, like you love to save money. You're a free spender. Your natural tendency is to just spend without thinking about the numbers. Then there's our perfectionist who obsesses about every dollar in and out. And then our balance seeker. And the balance seeker is really somebody who's trying to find a balance between spending and saving, but you still have your natural tendency. So you can take the quiz. It's kickstartaccountinc.com/quiz if you want to go find out what your personality type is. But then from there, when you look at your income statement, it'll be really clear for you. Usually when I go through those, people are like, I know exactly what I am.
Yeah, I think I'm the perfectionist. I'm curious, what do you think you are in terms of your spending personality?
So I think I am a keeper. However, I have some free spending like tendencies. So overall, I want to keep and save and know that I have enough. But then I decided I wanted this walking pad treadmill the other day and I was like, I don't care how much it is. I want it. Yeah. I want it right now. So I have some free spending tendencies from time to time, but overall I would never do that and put my business or my team in jeopardy.
Right. Right. Well, Danielle, I think that's all I have for you today. Can you just tell us where we can find you on social media?
Kickstart Accounting on Instagram. You can check out our podcast, Business by the Books. Every week we come out with a podcast episode on how to manage your business using your numbers and financials. If you need bookkeeping help or CPA tax services, you can go to kickstartaccountinginc.com. We are accepting new clients right now, and we would love to be a resource for you. Thank you so much for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for coming on. I'm excited to just provide that resource because I get that question all the time. How do you find a good CPA or a bookkeeper? So guys, be sure to check Danielle out. I'm going to link everything she talked about in the show notes. You can find Kickstart Accounting. But thank you so much, Danielle. It was great to chat with you, and we're feeling good about tax season. So thanks so much.
Of course.